Into the final moments, Alex Payne trying to keep this side going forward. Haskell takes it on now with just relentless chat, largely about himself. And there's Tindall to add the finishing touch of glamour and World Cup winning stories and a slightly sideways nose. That is how you podcast. A dominant display by the good, the bad and the rugby.
Hello, Dream Team.
Hello, Dream Team.
Alex isn't still back yet. You might see him, but it's just a
hello,
shadow.
Dream Team. He's back. And we can all relax.
Well done. Beginner driver. You managed to get from A to B all
it's
right.
Like feel, it feels like the slippers are back on.
Oh, they are. The comfortable pipe and slippers.
Welcome to another episode of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. I hope you're keeping well. We're back in sort of unity.
I wouldn't describe that.
No,
we're
not.
No.
We're back in the same room.
There's sort of a splinter between us now that we know your medium is wood.
For 20 minutes. So we grabbed him while he's back. Haskell's done a very good job at managing. Thank you for all the lovely messages to him. He's riding really high on the love and support that he's had for his beginner presenting.
It was good that we got the social manager to turn off the filters, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And to leave a few nice comments as well.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about, let's get straight into it. I've got a tight show because Tins has got a train to get, and when Tins needs to go, we all got to hurry. We had a good weekend in Wales, didn't we?
We had a lovely weekend.
How
in
was
Wales.
Friday night for you? It's quite nice, because we're going on tour and we'll talk about it in a moment, but it's quite nice to be back out on stage.
Yeah, it was good to be back out on stage. Stage we know well from the last tour.
Yeah.
And it was good to see SQ again in great form.
It was.
But I mean, it was a fantastic evening for us. We didn't have to say anything. The only downside was it did get a little bit thin in oxygen in there because there was two very large men just chomping away at the oxygen.
Chuntering away.
Yeah, having a
if oxygen was rationed,
a verbal cock-off to see who could say and tell the most stories.
There wasn't a lot of oxygen required because everyone was gasping for breath at all the laughter I was bringing to them. I mean, SQ was reasonably funny, but, you know.
We had Steve Borthwick with us as well.
Yeah, that got a bit drier for a minute.
17 hours before England took on Wales.
Well, lovely.
He was brilliant.
Lovely,
he was
really, 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 really good.
Very sweet he was as well, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was very sweet.
I think he's been quite open in the past about his relationship with the media and potentially with microphones. From the moment he arrived, just complete control of the whole situation.
He's brilliant. Authors.
Happy to be there, which I thought was really nice. I wasn't necessarily expecting that. Gave a huge amount, did longer than his allocated time.
You compare and contrast to Eddie and there was nothing that was going to offend anyone. He was really thankful for all the fans and what they do and how they get behind their team. And all he wanted them to do was, he said, look, we're trying to work. We're trying to get better. We are working incredibly hard. We really value your support. And how to manage the public perception of yourself compared to his predecessor is slightly different.
But I think he will probably have been given that as a directive because in the aftermath of
November...
He is that guy. And that's probably why he got the gig, is, you know, in the aftermath of November...
On the rugby field, he's not that guy. He's an absolute nose. But off
the
field...
You actually went worse than that. You said he was a nightmare.
He was a gobby, shite of a nightmare.
But I love
that. Generally, but no, you know when it gets bad is when he's on your team and you're slightly embarrassed by it.
Well,
and
you're like, we're very familiar with that on a regular basis.
Please shut... No, but his was all physical. He tried... You squirt him with water, he'd try and choke you. It was never witty banter.
Okay, we've got other
something
stuff
like he thinks he's developed since finishing playing rugby, but can't believe he's not said anything. But no, he was the Mike Brown of his generation.
Right. And then they went
Brownie.
We are going to come on to what a remarkable February it's been actually in the Guinness Six Nations. But before that, a little drum roll, please. Has can lay down a sort of after effect. We're going on tour. It's a big announcement for us because we are heading back around the country with our World Cup after party in the autumn when we get back from what is going to be an epic few weeks in France. We're going to be sharing what it says is we're going to be sharing World Cup stories and recapping the action from France 2023, but I'm not sure we've ever followed a running order on any of the shows that we've ever done in the history of us. So I think what we'll just say is it's going to be an absolute riot, hopefully celebrating some amazing rugby and potentially the tournament in the Northern Hemisphere or the trophy in the Northern Hemisphere. Have you got in front of you the dates?
Do you want to do the venues, we have got Guildford, London, Swansea, Cardiff, Edinburgh, Northampton, Reading, Oxford, Leicester, Birmingham, Southend, Exeter, Plymouth, Newcastle, Nottingham, Manchester and Bath. Ones to look out for, obviously the London Palladium. We sold that out last time. St David's Hall in Cardiff, Usher Hall in Edinburgh, the Derngate in Northampton, Oxford New Theatre. The Alexandra in Birmingham, the South End Cliff Pavilion, we've done that before.
That was good fun.
Exeter the Great Hall, Plymouth Pavilions.
Are you just renaming them all?
No, why?
He sounds like you are.
Am I? The Royal Concert Hall in Nottingham, O2 Apollo, Manchester, and Bath the Forum. We've been there, sold it out, smashed it. We had Jerry Gusket there.
I think it should be a lot of fun. It is going to be an epic look, few months for
if
the
we
game
can
for
do
us.
The job that we did in Japan, there will be a lot of
to talk about. Will we survive France in order to make it to the tour?
I don't know. I'm getting quite excited to do some real research of deep diving and where we should be going in France.
Good.
And you do know I'll probably be a broken man by then. I'll 100% will be divorced.
Right.
Well, because I've got my own tour, Sex Tries videotapes out now. Head over to jamesaxwell.com for tickets.
Are you struggling with sales on that? Because
few vendors have sold out, actually.
Have they? Yeah, but
so I'll be doing that. Hinton 15 Village dates. Hall, I don't want to go on about it. Let me finish. 15 dates. Then I've got 12 DJ sets in Ibiza. Then we're going to the World Cup. Then we're doing 17 dates with a Good Bad Rugby tour. I mean, should I just get divorced now or should we just do the
tape? And he said he wasn't an artist.
Yeah,
that was on the lock-in. Exclusive breaking news on this week's lock-in. Yeah. Do subscribe. It's only there
Alex
for those
works with a lot of wad.
Wad? What's wad?
What's wad?
Mike wasn't very good at English or art. Yeah.
Well, greater lessons, but greater hitting people.
Rent a bicep. tickets are on sale for our tour on Friday at 10 a.m. I can promise you, if you didn't come last time, it is going to be a lot of fun. We aim to please.
Where are they on sale, Alex? They're on sale at Cuff
Simon
and Taylor.
Pre-sale access.
If you go to my James Haskell Instagram as well, there's a link for my tickets for my tour and also for the Good Bad Rugby tour.
What's wonderful is Shara's going to take that last bit out.
No, she's not. She's not. Not if she knows where Shara's bread is buttered.
You can go to cuffandtaylor.com.
Or my Instagram.
Cuff is spelled C-U-F-F-E.
Yeah. He did do some school.
He did.
But I like playing rugby better.
Cuffandtaylor.com.
That's for idiots.
Come and have... It's going to be an awesome celebration of all things... Rugby World Cup and the shambles that it is. So come on.
I would say I would doubt very heavily that rugby is mentioned in any of it.
We are contractually obliged in case people like rugby and they think they're buying a ticket to a rugby thing.
Fine. Because we did have the last time we went on tour. People turned up and you could see there was a lot of what's the polite term for old people?
Geriatrics.
A gaggle of old people. No, oxygenarians.
A gaggle.
Now what are they called? You know, the silver hair brigade, what are they called?
Silver surfers.
The grey penny, the grey pound. There was a lot of grey pound in the mix last time, and they genuinely thought they were coming for an incisive breakdown.
Oh,
of
a lot
rugby.
Of empty seats in the second half of the shows.
I am just going to go with T's and C's. Please don't bring your kids.
Yes. Oh, yes, that wasn't a good night.
That wasn't a good night.
Although they sat with headphones on with their iPads. Yes.
I feel they went that mummy and daddy had to do a lot of explanation.
They learnt more in an hour than they did over their entire career in sex education classes and lessons in life. So I would say 15 and over would be safe.
Yeah.
No.
18
and over, absolutely fine. That's
24,
fine.
It's like alcohol, 24 and over only. Yeah. You can advertise to. Right, to the rugby. Is it worth just having a very quick... what February has given us. So we had probably the best game in the history of the Six Nations in Ireland, France. We've had England yo-yoing from the disappointment, obviously, of Murrayfield getting back on track against Italy and then getting the job done in Cardiff. We've had Scotland winning at Twickenham. We've had them obviously battering Wales. We've had them coming quite close against France. We'll talk about that. Italy vastly improved.
The most interesting team, Italy, to watch at the moment.
You said that. I love watching
I'd rather watch Italy than anyone else.
We've had all sorts of bits and bobs. How do you reflect on we've turned for home in this year's tournament? What have we had? What are we marking this year's Six Nations out of 10? Overall,
no, I think it's been one of the best that we've had. I feel that the last 3 years we keep saying that, but I think there's more this year. As James rightly said, I think Italy have brought a lot more to the party. Obviously played Ireland on the weekend, a under strength Irish, but played their role, played their part within it. You had the injured animal that was France got back on the horse, and then
a cock with a broken wing.
Yeah, and then you have two teams that are struggling to find out their identity and who they are at this very present moment in time in England and Wales. Who, if you just look at it as a game, was an entertaining game. If you then go into the skill sets,
do you think they are struggling to work out who they are, or do you think they're on just in the early stages?
It was interesting talking to Borthos, wasn't it, on the Friday night about how he's just trying to get their confidence back, and that's what it looked like. On Saturdays, you look like two teams. You get into this cycle where you don't want to lose, and you'll do anything not to lose. And that, a lot of the time, it shows itself in kicking and overkicking and not trusting yourself with the ball. And I still think both of those teams did that. England had a great 20 minutes, went 10-0 up, and then it looked like they were like, oh my God, we need to stop playing now. We need to make sure we win.
Mm.
And it wasn't until, you know, the intercept from Reece Amick where they realised, well, we've got to go back to it and we've got to actually start playing again, and and they managed to get through it.
Let's get into the detail then of the three games. Before we do that, I'll give friends at Honda, and if you haven't seen the video yet of these two prattling about in the back of a Honda HRV, do go and have a look on our channels. We would like a one-word review of the weekend's rugby, and therefore, if you had to sum it up in a single word, what would that be? So, answers on a postcard, please. We're going to write our word down on our clipboards. And this is, I've prepared one earlier. This is our little show and tell. Michael, first of all, please, the word that you would use to describe the weekend's action.
I have gone to for a word that's described, because it takes in the whole week, of what the Wales players have had to go through, what we are reading now on what they're having to go through today. And the two red cards, one of them was pure insanity.
Insanity. I like it.
I think
it.
There's been a lot of mayhem out there at the moment, a lot of it not needed, and that's why I've gone for insanity.
I like that, because actually, not just this weekend, I think the game in general is probably suffering from a little bit of insanity across the board right now, isn't it?
Yes.
Good.
But I'm sure we can fix it somehow.
We're going to. Here we go.
Fairly copied.
Madness. Madness. So along the same theme.
Yes.
And is that a thumb,
thumb
or a penis?
Down.
It's a thumb.
Thumbs down.
It's a thumb.
I'm sure it didn't start as a thumb.
It was 100%
a thumb.
You're
drawing a penis, you've turned it into a hat.
If you listen to GBR Lock-In, which is a thing behind a paywall, don't
that?
Panic, you'll find out that Alex is great at arts and crafts. His medium is wood. I admitted I can't draw, but I have tried my best there. To a thumbs down. I have a thumbs down.
But there's
rugby.
Clearly one thing he drew a lot when he was at school.
Yeah. Winkies.
Well done, no, James. Lovely that. Artwork to accompany the word mad. What, have you justified that? Why have you gone madness?
Just to why, because the Welsh, oh God, I can't put fucking teeth in, because of the Welsh situation, because of the red cards, because rugby in general, which is quite irritating, and it's just a bit mad, isn't it, at the moment? Just can't really get a grip on it, can't get a handle on it, there's not a lot of consistency going on.
The other reason was what we're hearing back as well from the Netflix is how people aren't embracing that, which I think is insanity. Because,
why is the game not able to see the opportunity?
I just don't understand why every player, every coach doesn't see how much this is going to elevate them as individuals. You know, we're pushing really hard to get your names on the back of your shirts. This will be a global product. Alpha, if you do go into the lock-in, Alpha, who watched his first game of rugby ever.
Part of our production team. And in fact, an increasingly important part of this pod.
Yeah, it could be. You might start knowing him better more than you know us very soon. But, he watched his first game and he said it would definitely, 100% he'd be more interested in watching to get to know the players and understanding it. He watches a lot of the football and he wants to know more. So let's embrace it. Let's get behind it.
I don't
Netflix,
understand.
In Netflix we trust.
Just the level of arrogance of rugby. To have any complaints about a Netflix documentary.
And deny access and bits and pieces.
You can't understand why Wales players did it, because they're in a hell of a
standard. But that's the perfect time to show it.
If you want to get your story out, put it through Netflix. Show how incompetent they are. Don't close the doors. Yeah. Like, why is it that every major sport can do it? NFL teams where you're seeing players getting fired, like a coach wants to see you, bring your playbook, you're out the door. Why have we got anything to say about it? Why have you got people in the media, not the written media this time, older people around in rugby, commenting on it? You've got no concept of how important this is.
You got coaches worried about what they can say to players. Then you had that guy who did the New York Jets, I can't remember what the coach's name was, and he was like, did a massive speech and went, right, let's go get a fucking snack.
Yeah.
This big fat fella just walks off, he's chewing M&Ms all day. But it's brilliant TV, and it shows what they are as characters and shows who they are. I understand that this is the thing with rugby, you know, has said how arrogant we are, but you've got to understand people need to see flaws to understand the people. And that's what endears people each other.
I can understand in a litigious world we live in now, and a very hypersensitive world where feelings are overriding facts.
Someone's used that word a lot, hasn't it? Litigious.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we
live in a world, as I said, where feelings override facts now. That's what all we care about is what people are feeling. I can understand if you had a team meeting, some team meetings I've been in where there's been some characterization of certain things and some lines crossed in regards to making people laugh. I understand that. Well, you probably wouldn't want to show that. But everything else has got to be on the table. Everything's got to be on the table. The emotion, what you say to people. You know, if you're prepared to say it to someone, you should be prepared to go out on TV. Yeah. Like, what's the worst thing to say? You fucking shit. Come on, lads, you're awful. Why? You know, like, I would have no problem for 90% of the stuff that happened to go on camera, because rugby needs it, because no one cares. No one knows. No one cares. If we don't have it, it's going to die.
So, let's have your word, Alex.
Tough.
Ooh, and you did the artist. Oh, shady.
Just to bring some of my artistic talent to the table. Please enjoy if you're watching. Tough. Italy, tougher to beat. England, Wales, quite a tough watch, but I quite enjoyed it for the fact that it was quite tough. You know, it wasn't. It was two sides, as you said, really battling. Wales are in a hell of a pickle at the moment, and I thought that loss for Scotland was tough as well. Although I think the game was probably enhanced by the fact that both sides played with 14 men.
Yeah,
and that's a debating point for another day. But insanity, madness, and tough.
Mm.
The beauty of rugby right now. Well done. Thank you to Honda. That is our one word weekend review, and we do love working with them. If you haven't seen that video that we've mentioned
please
already,
send your one words.
Please send us yours. Yes, exactly. We'll tag them in. Do check out the challenges we did with the girls at the Good Scouts Rugby Department and in two Honda HRVs. I only did the talking. I wasn't allowed to drive. I haven't passed my test yet, unfortunately, but hopefully
you weren't allowed to wear your backless driving gloves and your seat cover and your beads, were
we? Nor I get driven.
He didn't have his leather steering wheel cover.
Yeah, and his little embossed family crest gear stick cover.
What we haven't had yet is the valet bill for the back of the car after you threw the milk everywhere.
Yeah.
No, less that, more the milk in the back of the car.
Well, no, the arse gate is the person in front who was driving.
We did spill some milk in the car.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, well, listen, it was
spill some milk.
You weren't great at, you know, passing and shifting the ball at the best of times of your career. All you had to do was hold on to it, and you know.
Best thing was, I didn't.
You did actually fumble it.
I didn't even get wet.
No, that's remarkable. I do wish you put it down the back of his neck.
It would have been nice next if time. I just left it where it was.
Yeah, that was a nice stitch up.
Thank you, Honda.
But he was going on holiday and he wanted to wear his shell suit, didn't he?
It wasn't a shell suit.
You could do so much better in the haute couture department.
Come for you with your plimsolls and your orange burnt orange socks. You're right.
Yeah, I like a burnt orange sock. Right, should we get into it? Let's come back to the rugby, because I want to pick up on what's happening in Wales at the moment. I know lots of people are talking about it, and I know that everyone's going to have their own views on it, but there's a really interesting article which, as we go to print, has just emerged on Wales Online. 12 Welsh rugby players who have been earning up to £250,000 a year have been told they will now only get £30,000 a season in crushing meetings, screams the headline. The 12 players met with their bosses at their club last week, some told they didn't even want to insult them with an offer. So to give you a bit more context around this, 12 Cardiff players, some of whom are internationals and experienced regional players, were called into individual meetings with bosses last Thursday where they were told there simply isn't enough money to offer them anywhere near what they're currently earning. Some were told they weren't even prepared to be offered a contract because the offer was so low. Others were informed there wouldn't be a job for them next season. This is unbelievable.
Do you know what the most shocking thing about all of that is?
Yes.
Someone's actually spoken to Wales Online and they haven't just lifted the article from someone else.
Well, that's impressive.
That's the most surprising part of it.
You're making a very big assumption there.
Well, I know they said someone's spoken to Wales Online.
A player.
Okay, yeah.
So when you went from Wasps to Northampton,
yes.
Can you give us numbers? Because yours dropped. You went to sort of work experience.
I wouldn't like to give numbers because in context of, you know, cost of living crisis and people, I don't want to pretend have a...
Percentages?
Huge. I would say...
25? 30% of what you were earning?
Oh, no. I'm trying to work out the maths on this now. I would say well over... I lost 3/4 of what I was earning.
So your pay, you were in moving from Wasps to Northampton.
Yes,
you took a 75%
yes
pay cut.
Yes,
flipping heck.
Yes,
and tell me, because what that will do is put
amongst
context
tax
on this.
Comes into that as well,
right? And why did you
then
take
you put
that
games
deal
into it? Two games, yeah. So it's probably all right.
Yeah,
when
you put
game.
Games into it, I actually own Northampton, but you're not getting the money back. So,
but this is really interesting because I'm interested as a high earning, high profile, top performer. Why did you take that deal? How was it sold to you? On what basis did you take a 75% pay cut?
Okay, so the concept behind it was I wanted to keep playing. Wasps did not offer me a contract in any way, shape, or form. I was told that they were not going to offer me one because they didn't want it to be insulting. and they told me that they didn't think that I would be able to be a squad player behind Jack Willis because they didn't think I was going to start every game. And they didn't give me the opportunity to do that. You know, and I said, one of the things that people have always said about me, apart from being an arsehole, is that I was a good squad man. So that's the reason they didn't do it. So I never got an opportunity. I obviously thought about going abroad, but it was the final push before the World Cup. And I thought if I had an opportunity, I would go to Northampton. They very kindly offered me a contract. It was obviously a 75% pay cut in relation to what I was
getting. A gamble to maybe go to the World Cup.
Yeah, I took a gamble to go to the World Cup. I knew it was a good team. It was an opportunity to play with Courtney, Dylan, and you know the boys there at the club. And I thought with Chris Boyd, what he'd done with the Hurricanes and how he wanted to do things, it was a good opportunity. So I took it. Luckily, I was still able to earn money off the field.
Yeah.
But there was some bits and pieces where it was quite hard with the kind of the obviously salary, like the mortgage, you know, the mortgage I had, car I had, you know, all the insurance, all the bits and pieces I had and the lifestyle I had. It was quite difficult to manage that. But because I was earning so much stuff off the field and trying to run around like a blue-ass fly, it kind of negated it. But to have your salary cut from one thing to another like these boys would be is a nightmare. Now, I know a lot of people earn way less than that and it's relative, but again, you know, you put your body on the line. The demands are very different than, you know.
The big thing is with sport is it can be over at any point.
Yeah,
that's the thing you've got to take into account. You don't know where the end is, and that so you've got to try and maximise every opportunity.
So, what do you make of this story? That I mean, by the sound of it, there is very very little money.
There is
just at Cardiff. So 12 of the top earners at Cardiff, and you wouldn't have to do very much digging to work out who they are basically being moved on.
But it's ironic when I said about the quote about when I said about not going to insult you with an offer, it's Dyer Young's the coach of Cardiff because of that. You know, obviously it wasn't Dyer's decision not to keep me. I think it was higher up, but I think, you know, he you know, has obviously come out and said that to a couple of people because he probably just doesn't have the money to do it. Because I always find this is very difficult because I 100% back the Welsh boys because what we talked about on the show with Benjamin Kayser and Foxy was that, again, this is another case of senior members of the rugby community bypassing the players, making unilateral decisions without any conversation or dialogue, and then expecting the players to go, yes, sir, thank you, sir, you know, and drop their trousers and take it, which is that's never going
to
happen.
It sounds to me, and the brutality of it is it's 12 people who they don't really see an international future for, so they don't want them in the league.
Talipe Faletau, Liam Williams, Josh Adams, just to speculate, Josh Navidi would be another of the sort of top earners in there.
So, I don't agree with it, but I think it's them saying we need to look at youth. So
yeah, but I mean, what if you're moving on? I mean, the state of the Welsh top tier at the moment.
But because they've got rid of the 60 cap rule now,
where it's going to come down to 25.
They can probably get rid of it, try and make people go play elsewhere and still be able to pick them back and focus on younger players in Wales. But
yeah, that's one thing that being changed will make a dramatic difference now.
Are you pro that then? Do you think 100%. That is a...
I mean, I don't think there should be any cap rule.
Yeah, so everybody can play anywhere.
I actually think this needs to. We've got to a point now where, with England, with the reducing salary cap, where we need to get rid of that.
So that's really interesting because what we come on to here, and this story in Wales is going to run and run and run by the sound of it.
Sorry to interrupt you, Alex. The reason with that is that, you know, again, it's the same thing with politics at large, you know, and or putting the government's incompetency and the fact they lose a pile of money doing stupid stuff or give it to their friends to one side. There isn't a magic pot of money that's going to fix all these solutions. Unfortunately, there isn't the money in Wales. It's not like people are holding it. I think, unfortunately, you've just got to go, do you know what? We're probably going to lose a team. We're probably going to lose stuff. The players need to have the freedom to be able to go where they are. And a game will develop through the survival of the fittest. France will maintain unless something happens. The Premiership will maintain. We'll probably lose some clubs. The Welsh regions may have to assimilate into something else if they can't afford it. Because you can argue all you want. And my point is always, I haven't looked into the details per se other than talking to Foxy, but my thing still stands. You've got to consult the players. Stop thinking you can make rule changes and fiddle around with stuff without consulting players and doing it properly. Otherwise, you'll be forced into this situation. I do think, however, the writing's on the wall and any player should be able to play anywhere. And I think that you should be able to put stuff into contracts. But, you know, I think Walters would love to pick players that are in France.
He's already said that.
What you can't do is start reducing the number. It's all right when you're expanding the number. So obviously from the days it was at 1.7 where it started, now then it went up to 7.9 or whatever. It's fine if you're expanding the numbers that you can say, well, if you want to earn the money, you need to stay here. But if you're then shrinking the numbers back down, you need to go, well, if you can get money elsewhere, go play there, we'll still pick you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you can't. It's all great. It's all great and good when you're expanding. When you're having to shrink a bit, you can't do it.
Steve Borthwick said he had enormous sympathy for the Wales players in advance of the game. Courtney Laws had quite a lot to say about the fact that it is not where it needs to be right now for these England players. Jamie George offered his support for the Welsh situation as well. It's glaringly obvious, said Jamie, that the Premiership isn't a place that we want it to be in either. What's amazing is that the RFU are really receptive to conversations being had. Last week I wasn't able to attend the meeting, but there was a conversation about that kind of thing with senior members of the RFU. I think the important thing is that firstly the RFU are open to those kind of conversations, and secondly the players need to be involved in them as well. We need to get the right people in the room. Can you see something coming down the pipe here in terms of England players, RFU, current agreement, ability to play abroad, earnings?
Well, because the player agreement's up very soon, isn't it? So it needs to be done now. But the question is then: are players going to be able to take a step back and look at the bigger picture of where the game is, and go and figure out what's fair, or are players going to be what players are and want to make as much as they can in the short period of time, because that's the nature of the game, of being a professional sportsman? I think if these numbers for the Premiership and the salary cap are going to stay similar, then you have to open up the worldwide leagues to allow players to go and get what they need to get, and then still have the ability to play for their country. I don't think you can ever hamper that.
What about this then, Haas? Because you were involved in the English negotiations last time out. WRU interim chief exec Nigel Walker apologised to the players. Yes. Ken has used the phrase laughing stock. I'll let other people decide whether we're a laughing stock. It's been an unedifying period for us. There are no two ways about it. I understand the position the players were in, and we at the PRB shouldn't have put them in that position. We're going to make sure we don't get into it again.
Yes, exactly. So the point is, you know, obviously the players' unions, you know, for us it's the RPA, you know, they have been a bit ineffectual. I think they're a bit toothless. I think, you know, I've said to the RPA before, I thought they'd do an amazing job, but I feel like sometimes, you know, when you take money from an organisation you have to consistently negotiate with, how much power are you able to exert? How rough can you be? There needs to be, you know, sort of standalone body. When we got involved in negotiations, we were not presented with all of the facts in regards to, say, the commercial earnings of the England team. So, you know, if you're asking for a fee, and you're asking to negotiate your player's contract, you need to see the data and go, right, how much are the RFU earning off the back of utilising our name and image and making us do, you know, Ben Youngs and three other players on a billboard across Waterloo Station, and, you know, doing player appearance after player appearance and, you know, monetizing us as players and our image rights. What does that look like? Because then you can cut your cloth accordingly. How much money is being taken from the gates? How much money does the England team derive, and what is it we should be paid? And so I pushed back on lots of things and was told pretty much that, you know, there was a certain limit to what we could push back, and we weren't going to do it, and they were never going to agree to it. And I sort of cut the time and said, well, what's the point of negotiating if we're never going to force an issue? So we got to a good place, and we are one of the best, well, if not the best played team in the world now, going from when Mike started, when they were pretty poorly paid before Francis Barron came in, wasn't it?
Well, it sort of...
Can you remember what your match fee was when you made your debut?
12,000.
12 shillings it was.
12,000.
12,000 match, and it's now 27, isn't it?
Shit.
I thought it's gone down.
I remember we went on strike because we wanted it.
And
to
what
go
did
up.
That strike get you? Can you remember what the T's and C's were?
I
you
can't
were
remember.
For?
I wasn't, because I was only 20 at the time.
Yeah.
So I can't really remember. I can
living the dream.
Concussions.
I was.
But was it about? It match was fees, it,
but,
or was it
but
image
it, it
rights?
Was, it
or?
Was match fees.
Yeah.
Because for the same reason, Hask said, you know what, you know roughly what the RFU were earning at the time and off each game and everything else, and you know we never got round to pushing our stuff up. Yet we were the number one team in the world, and you know we're riding on a high, really going into when we went into those before the Argentina game, I think.
Yeah, it was.
And in all fair, we took a meeting and we were going to pull our commercial rights. So we were going to turn our shirts inside out and just piss off the commercial side of it. And it was then said, "What? Don't do that because that could cause long-term damage. Why don't you just say you'll pull all your work rights if you don't? Because then it's definitive. They know that that's coming." And the boys went in. We had a good senior crew then. They went in and did a 9-hour meeting. I think they got out at 4:30 in the morning, and Francis hadn't moved, and so we pulled our work rights, and then we got kicked out of the hotel.
Really?
Yeah.
What, at 4:30 in the morning?
Not at 4:30. Oh. At 8 a.m. the next morning, we had a meeting with and told the coaches. And then by 10, obviously...
Was that why Clive said he'll back you?
Whether right or wrong, Clive had to... I thought Gatlin, the way he handled it was
it's a horrible position for
him. But he handled it probably slightly better than Clive, because Clive had sort of said he was going to support us, and then realistically his bread's buttered on one side, so he couldn't really go against the union. So we then had to leave the hotel. And
you have tears in his eyes. That I said that on the pod the other day. I don't know if that got kept in. But allegedly, had but tears then, in his eyes. Don't do it.
But we held firm as a team, and we got the
did
resolution.
Because there was always rumours that one broke ranks.
No, Austin Healy was at the scale.
No one broke ranks, and there's probably more I could say on it, but I'm not going to say it on here. Okay. But
someone broke ranks, and Martin Johnson got back in ranks.
And obviously we managed to get it through, and then we played and we won on the weekend. But you have to say that is a completely different situation to what the Welsh boys are going through, because I can't understand what it'd be to have your whole salary, your whole financial future be held in your hands. We were arguing over a couple of £1,000 a game rather than...
And did Francis give in?
Yeah, they had to, because they were going to have to place a team from the Championship to play Argentina.
But that's my point, and actually what I think I commend the Welsh boys, because again, in this rugby landscape, until you take drastic action and demand that your voice is respected, and I hope the guys going to negotiate this next time are able to see the bigger picture, to ask those relevant questions, but also have a financial mind. There's no point when we argued about the pay cuts for the players. Right, I said probably the right thing to do was take a pay cut, but unless it was done in the right way and you presented the information and told how it worked, it wasn't. You know, for me, it wasn't good.
And this is the thing: is are the RFU going to be open enough to understand that they might be wrong? I think. And again, we've talked a lot about it, about the RFU always feeling that they're always right and they've got that you should just do. It's a privilege to play for the RFU, so you should just take whatever they suggest. And I don't think that's right. I think they've got to also be able to shift and mould as well.
Producer Shara is absolutely on the money. Your strike in 2000, the vibe was over a guaranteed income increase through international appearances. Barron offered a reported guaranteed 60% increase in pay. Johnson and his players were holding out for 6% more. A further 20% may have been available depending on results. Clive Woodward in 2000 said on BBC News, "They know my feelings loud and clear. I think they've made a huge mistake. There are three or four very strong characters involved, and some of the others will be driving home now thinking, what have we done? Whatever happens, there'll be an England side out there on Saturday. I just hope whoever runs out on Saturday gets a standing ovation from the crowd." 6%, eh?
Haggle. They push those bargains, isn't it?
Haggle. Also. Okay, I have a horrible feeling that we're going to be having a discussion about this again. I don't think it's the end of the road as far as Wales or necessarily England are concerned.
So I know we're going to move on, but just tell me one decision that's been made in rugby recently where they consulted the players. Season extension, no one wanted. Bringing, say, for example, South African sides into the league, no one talked about it. The concussion,
into Europe.
Concussion rules.
Netflix.
Netflix.
Well, their players were last to know.
Yeah. Why do these men, because it's got to be men, because men are always at the root cause of all these balls ups and greed and incompetency, why do they not just speak to the players? Why do you not ask them? Because I know they are self-interested, but I when we negotiated that players' contract, the most important thing I cared more about than the money, I know it's out of character, but was the rest periods. I literally said, you've got to give us mandatory 5 weeks off and you have to sanction the teams that break those rules. So Saracens have to be sanctioned for encouraging the players to come in. I don't give a shit if Mauro Itoje wants to come in because everyone else is coming in and wants to do his biceps. You're not allowed to do it. Go come down on them hard. Why do World Rugby not get some players around the table and stop talking to themselves and talk to other people and say, what do players want really, this concussion stuff? Do we need a players injured fund? You know, what do players want? Stop ignoring us. And actually, I wanted Wales to strike. I wanted Wales to strike because somebody somewhere has to make a stand. I mean, I told you when I talked about it last year, I took Wasps on strike, and all anyone was interested in was trying to find out who the ringleader was so they could sack them instead of just coming to the table to have a meeting.
Why did you go on strike with Wasps?
Because they didn't pay their image rights. The pitch was awful. The training facilities were awful. We would lie continuously about a training centre that wasn't opened. The cars were being robbed every week. There was a home game. The robbers just looked at their weigh schedule and just turned up, robbed us. It was a catalogue of errors. All we asked for was a seat round the table to have a discussion. And I took them on strike. The RPA told me I was contractually out of line and that I wasn't able to do it. So I basically said to them, you either want to help us or you can fuck off. And they were like, no, we want to help, And then all the owner wanted to do was find out who the ringleader was so he could sack him. And basically said, all they were feared about was they're going to palm the younger players off, threatened to sack them because they couldn't get rid of us. And all we wanted was conversation. Lo and behold, after everything settled down, and when we pushed it as hard as we could, the rest of the guys felt a bit uncomfortable. I was going to just say, look, we're going to play the game, but we're not going to do any media. We're not going to do any commercial. That's it. We're just going to do the game and leave. They came and had a meeting, really friendly. The owner had tears in his eyes. Nothing changed, but at least he came to the table. But the point was, I just don't understand why he couldn't have done it in the first place. Why are them people just not sitting down having open dialogue? And why is every player's organisation this toothless, ineffectual thing? Why? I don't understand. Why are you even... ironically, I think there's one player in the Premiership. I won't name him because I don't know if it's common knowledge, but he isn't part of... I think there's one Premiership player that isn't part of the RPA. He refuses to be part of it, but and then he's not allowed to any commercial engagement because he just says it's a crock of shit, doesn't believe in it, doesn't
back
it.
You're the vice chair of the charity.
No, I'm vice chair of the restart,
charity,
which is a good competent arm. We've got a separate entity.
Okay,
we're
cool.
We're actually doing all right.
Right.
I mean, I'm happy to be vice chair of RPA if you want to, but things will change very quickly if they were.
To be continued.
I think
it's very interesting. I didn't realise that the both of you had been to the picket line quite as much as you have, and by the sound of it, the picket line's going to be quite
busy.
We did
with England as well. We refused to get off the bus once for a team meeting. It was only because they hadn't sorted out our pay and hadn't sorted about an agreement and hadn't agreed the thing, so we turned up to a dinner at Twickenham. And we none of us got off the bus. And Lewis Media was like, come on, you've got to go off the bus. We just kept shouting, calling him the RFU puppet. And said, we're not going to listen to you. Fuck off, Judas, is what we called him. Called him Judas. Yes. It wasn't highbrow, intelligent conversation. And he was like, come on, we've got to go. And then we sat there for an hour. Wouldn't go into the dinner until they agreed it. And then eventually, everyone broke and we got off the bus. But yeah, because they hadn't agreed our players' contract.
Final quote I'm going to read to you, and you've got to tell me who said it and when. For the players, this is the worst case scenario. We're all desperately upset it's come to this. We still really want to play on Saturday. I'd like to think that other players can see the larger picture that's being painted by the players who are possibly sacrificing their international careers. Who said that and when?
No idea.
Damien Hopley.
No, Matt Dawson in 2000, but it could have been anyone of the Welsh.
I thought Dawson, yeah.
It's just interesting that, here we are 23 years on and players are saying the same things in different countries, different nationalities.
Yeah, but yeah, I think rugby at the time was a different place then. We were doing it for different reasons because we were riding a high, whereas now it's understanding where we are as a game.
I think that's the point. I don't think it's about asking for more money. I think that's where it gets confused. Well, everyone wants just a conversation. Yeah, present the facts.
Understanding.
Let's bring it the right way and let's work out where you are spending the money and how we can do it best. Because ultimately, the top level of the game is what drives the rest of it.
But it also just shows the lack of understanding at the top when you bring in marquee players and you keep bumping up their salary cap all that time. And all you're doing, we're putting clubs under more and more financial pressure.
Yeah. It ain't easy. No one said it was, but we don't seem to be ripping into the answers, do we? Shall we talk rugby? And we'll do it in sort of, because lots of other very good pods out there that will take you through the angles of entry into the breakdown and the kicking statistics. Wales 10, England 20. How was the family WhatsApp group? There's some very nice pictures, actually, that came out of...
Yeah, lovely coat, Kate. Lovely,
very nice coat. Catherine, I don't know who made it, but very nice.
Wales, sorry, what did you just say? lovely coat.
Did you not see a coat?
Oh, a coat. Yes, coat. It was a great coat. Yeah.
Look, the game... I thought it really was two games who were
two
teams that were struggling with confidence. Obviously, Wales haven't won in seven, eight now.
Yeah,
is it eight? And England really haven't found their form under Borthers. They look like they're still trying to figure out what they are. I thought there were bits in there that were brilliant. I thought the first 20 minutes, you sort of set that tone. We talked about on the Friday night how you've got to sort of silence that crowd. That was the biggest thing for me. It was the first time I've gone to the Principality and you sat around and after 2 minutes you're going, the fans don't think they can win this. It was so quiet. There was more... The English was more vocal than...
Yeah, swing low, rang out.
Rang out three or four times. And that was the biggest thing. And then it sort of changed when Rhys Sammet put them ahead with that. But England managed to get the control back. But there were bits of good stuff in there. You know, you sent out about how they're doing so well at the ruck in terms of ruck speed and everything else. But
defensively they were really good as well.
Jack Willis has been fantastic in the two games he's come back. Ollie Chesham as well is
Lewis Ludlam as well.
Yeah, yeah, Lewis, yeah. So I think there were moments there. There were three on twos, which those still annoying kicks that Ellis can come on and defend again. But where they should have scored tries, I feel they left two or three tries out there purely on confidence and not backing themselves. And I think that is the biggest thing this England need to do. They just need to go back to backing themselves, because there were opportunities there for them that they didn't take, and that's the things they've got to work on.
It does sound like there's a lot of work going into sort of reinflating the tyres. What did you like?
What did I like?
Because you watched it. You sat down and enjoyed it.
Yeah, Freddie Stewart was great.
He's so enthusiastic as well.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. No matches Jack Willis's enthusiasm.
Yeah.
His celebrations at the merest thing I like.
Yeah. Marrow, possibly.
Marrow used to be, but he's
been calmed down.
Now he's with Rock Nation. He's just a bit too cool now. You know, DJ Khaled would not appreciate Marrow.
I did like when Courtney came on.
Yeah.
I thought it was general. You could feel a little buzz in the England fans when Courtney came on.
Really?
And he strutted on.
Just big the course. Boss.
Give it to me, bruv, at the back. Just big light, yeah.
I thought hair was on point.
Yeah,
as well.
He's just
Alpha?
Great.
Hair on point?
He's so great, yeah. He was Alpha needs to get, for those who don't know, Alpha, he's a star of Good Bad Rugby.
Critiquing sporting haircuts.
I thought the breakdown was amazing. I'll tell you why, because when you looked at the stats, England got 8 turnovers. I think Wales got 7. So obviously there wasn't a big gap. When you looked at the game, you thought they'd actually got their pants pulled down.
Yeah.
But actually it was where they got them. You know, every time Wales got into England's half, they took them. I thought Lewis Ludlam was brilliant. I thought Don Brown was great. Jack Willis was phenomenal. Ollie Lawrence was competing all over the place. Brilliant. Owen Farrell got in there a couple of times. But I just think that determination, especially that back row, for me, was really, really good. They were aggressive, flying off the line. I think the impact hits at one point at half time were completely... There was 1 for Wales and 12 for England, at one point. So that's what I really like. That's that bite you talk about. You can build a win off the back of that level of aggression. So fair play to the lads.
I thought as well, and I'd be interested in your view on this, one of the things that Baz Ball has been credited for in the cricket is that the players are being told, look, you've got to run at this. This is not a one-off. You're not on show just for today. Go out there, do it. So Joe Root, in the first test against New Zealand, got caught playing a reverse sweep. And in the second test, they said, go and do it again. And he got caught playing a reverse sweep. But the point is, you're going to get a chance here over a number of games, not just playing for your place today.
Yeah.
And I thought Ben Curry off the bench was a really good example of that. He didn't enjoy the greatest of days against Scotland. And yet when he came on in Cardiff, I thought he, again, a couple of really important turnovers, a couple of pinches off the back of the line out, a couple of big busts in midfield. I just really enjoyed seeing a guy who potentially, you know, 2 weeks ago thought, oh Christ, I've had my chance and I haven't got it, and actually came on, got a second chance, and now shows what he's about on more Premiership level.
I saw that with under Stuart Lancaster, played against France, ball went over the top of the line out, Jules Plisson went one way, I went the other way, left my leg out, tripped him up.
Yes, you got yellow. Right? That was in the 55-35.
Yeah, chaos, got yellow carded, right? So I got put on the bench, and then I got on the bench for 10 minutes, then Stuart Lancaster took me off without bringing me back on, right? And that was it. And obviously, then we ended up winning, but some well England fans said that because I gave that penalty away, even though we won 55-something, if I hadn't done that, we would have won by more.
Yeah.
When I then played with Eddie, I played against Ireland, I hit Conor Murray marginally late, got yellow carded, took me off, brought me straight back on, let me play the rest of the game. Completely different, whereas you think, if you make a mistake like that, you think, fuck, that's the end of it. No opportunity to come back, no opportunity to get back into the game. You know, as a player, you're obviously mortified that you've given away a yellow card, unless it was some sort of really mad thing. And I just thought it was a different style of management where you're getting an opportunity to play, and suddenly when you realise that you do have the ability to get another game, for me, that breeds real confidence. You're not watching, looking over your shoulder the whole time. And for me, that was really one of the moments that stood out to me that really changed the way I approached it, because I was like, oh, thank fuck, I haven't. Because the worst thing is when you come off a field and all the coaches are giving you stink eye and no one's talking to you and you're sitting in the changing room.
Normally like after the end of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. All the staff are looking around, but when that happened, I was able to regroup, get back in and have an impact, and I felt good about it. And that's the same thing for these boys, because Ben Curry must have felt after getting pied off, for the game against Italy, completely out of the squad, that was him done.
Yeah.
One game, bad performance, well, not great performance, no opportunity, comes back in, does it again. That's so vital to looking after players and giving them an opportunity. Ollie Lawrence, pied off around Eddie Jones, not giving the benefit, 2 touches. It's been monumental in these last 2 games. So again, it goes to show, I'm Eddie's, one of Eddie's biggest fans, and I said before, he doesn't get it right all the time. This is a perfect example where he didn't get it right at all in regards to that one particular player. Ellis said, he's obviously a confidence man, needs to have his tyres pumped up, went to Bath, he's been carving up. He looks $1 million at the moment.
It was nice to see Anthony Watson back, actually.
Yes.
Still live, isn't
he? What a lovely guy as well. I don't think people really, because he's quite quiet, Anthony, but he's just such a good guy, Anthony. Charmer. Really, really, really nice guy. Can't fault him. Just a proper, proper good lad.
Yeah. Quick word on Ellis. Just another barnstorming, barrel rolling.
I know I don't pick him in my fantasy Six Nations team, which is still above there, but he is so expensive.
Do you want to explain why you don't? Yeah, why
yeah,
you don't
it's,
do that?
It's purely just price, and props aren't massive scorers of points, so it's a great way of just keeping your points.
So overall, solid foundations. England continue game by game, not massive leaps forward. What, but nice
what's going
steps
to be interesting?
In
that Welsh game, they were expected to win, so I think that added to the nerves of them.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting, their mindset going into the next two games, where no one's going to give them a cats in hell chance in either game.
Yeah.
Are they going to go, right, this is the game where you just throw the kitchen sink at and go out, enjoy yourself, and what will be, because that's the attitude I'd love to see them go in there with, because, you know, we've been to Ireland in the past and spoilt their show with the 30-point whipping we gave them after the Lions tour. That's why I'd like to see them in these next two games, is because no one's going to give them hope in hell.
It's interesting on France. So the question coming into 2023 was, can Ireland and France stay where they are? Ireland definitely right now look very comfortable in that position. But I remember Eddie, we did a show with Eddie before he left. He said he's not convinced by France. Actually, if you couple what they did in November, which was a really late win against Australia and a bit of a bum fight against the Bocker as well, who played most of the game with 14 men because Peter Stefanatore was sent off. And then you put that Italy performance where they were far from convincing. They then lose comprehensively in Ireland. And then they don't really... I mean, they look very good in part against Scotland.
Yeah,
but in part, Scotland had that game for the taking.
The worst thing about the Ireland and the Italy game for France was... what they've been over the past year and a half is brutal in defence, physicality wise, and that slipped off in those first two games. I felt it was back on the weekend in one way, in a moment of insanity, but I feel that they might be working a few things, but
I think England have got a really good shot against France.
At home, I think they do.
Okay, it's weird because I'd never go against England. Yeah. I just think at the moment, they're just further off than you
I think,
think
they are, but I think their graph is trending upwards, and I'm not sure France is.
Yeah, you look at Pinot was class. I thought Gael Ficou's playing incredibly well at the moment. Dupont's still playing how he wants to play. I think he's still got more to give on his standards. Flamon's been amazing. Yeah. Marchand was better on the weekend.
Yeah. Ramos was not better.
They're a proper team.
So I think. You know, they're working on a few things, but they're still... I also feel that at the moment, Faz looks like he's shouldering the whole emotional drivers of the team. I mean, I've never seen his kicking get down at 44%.
For the tournament? I mean, that's...
Yeah, never seen it anywhere near like that. And I just feel he's shouldering a lot of the stuff that's trying to resurrect... not resurrect the team, because that's the wrong word, but trying to, you know, as you say, pump its tires back up.
Yeah.
And that isn't really coming through for him. You know, the lack of confidence of him not to pass that ball on a 3-on-2 and him to grubber it through.
That was Slade.
But Faz did one as well.
Yes, you're sorry. But
I think Malins did one as well, which normally Malins wouldn't do that. Or maybe I'm confused, it wasn't Malins, it was Slade on that one. But the opportunities were there, and I don't feel it's far away. Now, would it affect the team by you swapping? I don't think they're going to swap it out for these two games.
No.
Unless it goes horrendously wrong against France.
I think they've pinned it Farrell for the World Cup. But what's really interesting is that 44%, I completely agree. It's unusual. He's had days before where he's really struggled off the tee, but I can't think of a match where his goal kicking has cost England a game. He normally... Yeah. has off days when England are scoring tries type thing. And, you know, they got the job done. I think possibly you look at the 44% and you think, you know, certainly another 10 points that should have been on the board. But there is so much that he gives you in terms of that belligerence and taking the game by the scruff of the net and the competitive levels and the breakdown work. Nothing comes down his channel and gets much change, etc.
It's very difficult.
Feels where this England team are now.
I think it's very difficult because we want to, you know, Borth has said on Friday as well, we want to play, he knows there's talent out in those channels that he wants to get the ball to. So it's finding that balance. But,
I also think that Faz's head is about making sure we win test matches.
Yes,
at the moment,
which is why they didn't take him off until there were 14 seconds on the clock. What it looks like is that Farrell is captain and incumbent and 10 through to the end of the World Cup. Is that the right decision for this England team, given what Borthwick said on Friday night?
My question, if I was Steve Borthwick, is it wouldn't be. We know how class Owen Farrell is, so I'd be asking him why. Why are you feeling all right? Is there something not set up right? Because I want to give you this freedom to not feel that you have to put those kicks in. I know they can put pressure every now and again, but recognising situational awareness. Does he not? You know, Johnny went through a period, Wilco, where he didn't really, I don't think he really trusted the guys outside him, so he shouldered a lot of it, and he ended up.
You were outside him.
I was actually. I came back, and I just felt he trusted me all his career to clear lines and stuff, and throw a miss one and hit one, and he was getting so much pressure in Ireland at Croke Park, and I'm like, just pass me the ball, and I went and talked to him afterwards, and he just felt that he was shouldering. He had to get everything down, plan the exits, do everything. And he didn't need to. And I worry that that's, I don't know whether this is true, but I'm just speculating completely, but I don't know whether that's how Owen feels right now.
Because Ollie Lawrence has got 10 caps.
Yeah, he feels that he has to really direct the traffic because he's the only captain.
Voice.
He's the only first receiver out there.
I don't see that as a problem at all with Farrell saying, right, is that the right decision? Yeah, 100%.
On another thing, George Ford will be interesting to see.
I think with
the speed of the ball that they're getting.
Is he playing well, Fordy?
He's coming back. I mean, it's still very early, but I think he's obviously got such a deep understanding with Steve from not only England, but also Leicester. Alex Sanderson speaks incredibly highly of him and what he's producing for Sale in terms of off the field.
You could go back. Again, you've got to prove your worth by form, first and foremost. But when England played their best rugby, which was when Eddie first took over and they were playing with rapid speed of ball and he was playing flat at the line, they were creative.
Just turns that on his head. I think kicking the ball away is more of a confidence play than keeping the ball in hand. Just hear me out. When I'm training, when lads like really feel like they're firing, they'll put these little kicks through. I know that's pressure plus rugby, so you're ending up turning the opposition. You're putting pressure on. You're trying to get turnovers, and you know if you don't feel like you're going to get through the front line, you're turning the opposition. I understand all that, but I would say that most of the time I see people when they don't have confidence, they keep the ball in hand and they try to play. When they're feeling like they're trying to to feel like they're confident, they kick it. Whereas I think for me that they're forcing it. They're almost like kicking it because they're like, we want to show our confidence. We want to be a bit risky. We're going to turn the opposition. We're going to put pressure. I think it's more confident fucking not kicking, but I think that's what they do. I think it's more confident kicking because it's more danger and more risk and more confidence to put a kick through than it is to play. But I think that's a manufactured confidence. I would say that. I would say that
I agree with you. If that was on the halfway line, I think when it's on the 22, you're. I don't think it is. I think, and it's also situational awareness. Like there were times where they were on to just move it and keep it in hand.
I just can't. You know, like I would always think that if I felt I was like super confident, I'd have a go at kicking it. So maybe that's just me. But when I've seen players in session, when you rate yourself, chip the ball over, chip the ball through. When it's a bit nervy, guys would then try and offload. But actually, I think maybe that's it's a manufactured thing. I think they're trying to express themselves by, someone's gone out, go and play. For me, going to play, they think is kicking the ball.
To remember is people don't turn into bad players. So, it's more for Steve to look at,
If you like your kicking analysis, there was a very good article from Charlie Morgan in The Telegraph who has really broken down the threat of Owen Farrell's boot, Marcus Smith's boot, and George Ford's boot, and that tells you
The best boot.
Well, I think Marcus was third in terms of the reward that you get. So what I would tell you is that the Max Malins try against Scotland was the first time England have scored from Marcus Smith putting boot to ball, and it's his 20 odd cap.
Yeah, and I would say that he would do a lot more high risk kicks. Yeah.
Quite possibly. I can't give you much more than that, but if you like the detail, go and find it there. A couple of other things very quickly. England's discipline, which has been a massive problem, 6 penalties only, which I think is a really good sign. A lot of the foundations, I think, are going in nicely.
That came from their physicality was back in a big way.
If you're knocking people back, then it's not
that
a problem.
That will get much more of a test against France. Can I just go off the game and just talk about two people who deserve a nod? John Owens Pundit, which you wouldn't have seen because you're in the stadium. But it's like a kid in a sweet shop. Yeah, and for a man who really did not have much love for the media as a player,
as an old man now, you can see the real twinkle about being back in the stadium. And I just thought it was really good fun. He just really seemed to enjoy it. And Danny Kerr on comms.
Danny Kerr was good, wasn't he?
He was really good. Yeah, actually, I think Danny, a note afterwards.
Danny is very good, yeah.
Fresh, fun, informed, current. Yeah. I thought he was... And there aren't many current players they who would feel as comfortable in that role as he quite obviously was. I thought he was really, really good. So nod to both of them. We could go on. We're down to the red zone. Do you want to go?
It was interesting. Do you reckon Wayne Pivac, do you reckon when Wayne Pivac was sitting there...
I mean, that must be very
that's what I mean, psychologically, I was thinking, is he not going, I fucking told you? Yeah. Like, his guys are shit. Or don't you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, like, he got a load of heat. Do you think it... I wonder what how to get through that.
It's got an alarm on it.
Is that it? Oh, the alarm is gone. That's it.
Thank you.
Tim's taking a half day today. Go on then, pack up and go.
He's such a bitch. Pack up again.
Are you off on holiday? Are you going straight to the airport?
Yeah.
Well, lovely to see you. Do you want to say anything just before you go about Scotland, France? You get 30 seconds. Italy, Ireland, Scotland or France?
So Scotland, France was a manic 20 minutes.
Brilliant,
unbelievable. Oh, even 30 minutes. Gilchrist red card is a red card. You know, he hit him so hard on that first shot and then came back, hit him at second. But I think Jalonch was carrying lower and... You know, you've got to be more aware of what you're doing. Madness for the props. Red card. I don't know why he's even there. That's and it was always a red card. I can't believe it took so long. But I just thought it was a great test match. Finn Russell again, just the way he shows and goes at the line. You know, he throws that intercept, but nothing affects him. He just comes, bounces straight back and stays his game. Great for any young kid watching. He's believing the process. Hugh Jones obviously
played brilliantly.
The Ireland. Italy game, again, haven't really seen as much of that I want to, so maybe I'll...
Hence why you're departing at this point. Yes. Safe travel.
Thanks, Mike.
Lovely to see you.
See you later, mate. Lovely. The myth. He's like a mirage, isn't he?
Yeah.
He just comes and goes.
Yeah.
Floats out. Right.
Properly committed. That's what we like. Unflushable.
Yeah,
bye. Have a lovely holiday. Send our love to the slopes. again. So that is England-Wales. Mm-hmm.
Wales, just you
England.
And me.
Oh, no, it's
just
nice,
the two of
little
us.
Saucer of milk and table
we
for two.
We can make it if we try. Just the two.
Ireland
of
got
us.
The job done out in Italy and obviously missing some very big name players. Actually, Ireland, you talk about timing your run in a tournament. I think they're going to get Sexton, Furlong, Henshaw, Jamison Gibson Park back for the trip to Murrayfield, which is juicy. I mean, that's real sort of calling the cavalry.
You know, they had obviously made a few changes to the Ireland squad. I always feel bad because it's one of those things where. You know, if you're going to play a team that you're perceived to beat, which they would have done with obviously Italy, as a player, you want them to make a couple of changes. But when they change quite a lot of the team, you know, it's always like no one plays that well because no one's that settled. Do you know what I mean? It's the same thing like when you played at club rugby when they go, right, we're going to make big wholesale changes. The team never plays that well.
This is your chance.
And you've hamstrung me. Give me a chance when I've got all Rolls Royces around me instead of, you know, BMW X5s or whatever. Do you know what I mean? I'm not comparing, but do you know what I mean? The principle still stands.
Yes.
So, and obviously Andy Farrell was quite harsh, but look, when you see who's going to roll back into the mix, and that's still, it's a credit against, I think Italy are very exciting. I enjoy the way they play. You know, they are much more about the rugby now than just kind of being disruptive.
I mean, because I completely agree with you. For years, you watch Italy and you groan, and you watch them now and you genuinely smile.
I just think they're playing with excitement. I think they've got good players. They've got good attack. They want to run. They've got guys that can cause you all sorts of problems. There's some confidence. They're pushing teams hard.
Yeah.
You know, they're in the lead in some games. You know, and they're making teams that, you know, on paper should beat them and have consistently beaten them over time look in parts average and vulnerable, and that's all you want. And I think whereas before, you know, if you did that for 20 minutes with Parise being the shining light, now you've got the guys all over the place and Capuzzo and, you know, players like that are causing opposition real problems. I think it's very exciting. I think it's great for the game. And I think that narrative about kind of, you know, Georgia, Italy, it's just completely gone. I don't think Georgia would last 5 minutes at this point in time. So for me,
it might be Wales, Georgia now.
Might imagine that.
I know people get very upset that we don't spend as long on Ireland and Italy and France and Scotland as we do on England, but we've got two English blokes here. There's some very good Irish podcasts out there if you want to go and have a deeper dive into it. We love the game. We enjoy it.
That's your lot on Ireland, Italy.
Did you also...
just before we did, on Ireland...
Yes, Jack McGrath retired the other day.
Lion with you, Lion, 2017.
Unbelievable guy. He's had a tough couple of years through injury, really kind of moving piece about surgeons getting him back on his feet. You know, was unable to bend over with his hip and some other issues and stuff. So I think it's amazing that there's been an outpouring. What an incredible player. He deserves all the accolades. A real nice team man and a proper sweetheart.
Good on you, Jack McGrath. Well played. And enjoy whatever comes next. That is Italy, Ireland, short and sweet. France, Scotland was just an absolute bun fight. And, you know, you'll be able to find deep dive analysis into it. It just was one of those games where you're never quite sure who's doing what when. Even when France were 19 points up, you still think Scotland got a really good sniff at this. A question I want to ask you. And we've been talking a lot about the future of the game and does rugby need to really go back to the sort of the start point and think, let's build a sport for 2023 rather than try and continue to play a sport that was founded in 1883 or whatever it was. Was it a better game because there were 14 men on the pitch for most
of
it?
Well, look, you know, Eddie Jones was trying to back that 10s,
yeah,
you know, or the 12s or whatever it is. Look, I think with more space in the game, the rugby's always going to be better because unfortunately, we've seen it time and time again. If a player makes a tackle, more often that's 14 players, 14 men on their feet in the defensive line, where is the space? So, you know, I remember when we were doing sort of work in New Zealand in 2012-13, talking about, you know, Jamie Joseph always talked about costing the opposition players. You've got to cost the opposition players every time you do a carry, every time you do a clear out, because you have to take men off their feet to allow space to be created, not the first phase, second phase, third, but fourth, fifth, sixth phase. Get people on the floor the whole time. You know, that's why the idea about taking jackling away is if you've got nothing to hit, no one goes off the feet, there'll be even less space. So you're better off making a rugby league style kind of play, you know, than taking some elements out of it and reducing some numbers as opposed to trying to you know, deviate from the game. So look, rugby will always be better with less players on the field. So, you know, it's one of those things. Do I think we could reduce stuff? 100%. Where you reduce them from, I don't know. You know, probably, you know, they're probably, I mean, because if you're going to say get rid of, you know, when you played junior rugby, you know, you don't have flankers and eight, you just have second rows and front rows.
Yeah.
You know, but at least we get rid of fat lads at the front and replace them with back rows like in rugby league and you could change the game.
So I like the idea of having a back row of two, but you can decide whether you play open side eight, eight blind side, two flankers, or you could bring in a hybrid player like Knowlesy, and then you could have a back row of three.
Yeah. Yeah, and you lose a player from outside the backs.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I think the problem where again, this is what I
like the idea because it makes you think more. You've got to analyse what they're doing.
The big bugbear I have, and again, you know, the written press, you know, come at me for this in certain times, and some of these old boys, and, you know, I always joke that when you watch, you know, the tries from the ends of the earth and rugby back in the day, and people say that, you know, you can't compare light for light. Look, you know, a double dummy switch used to make everyone fall over. And if you watch underage rugby now, they just chase one player around like a herd.
Yeah.
Watch all those tries from back in the day. There's like nine people running in a herd, absolutely no line, no organisation. Now, obviously, if they were playing in today's game, they would have adapted to what we're doing and they probably would all be remarkable. But back then, there was no discernible structure. Now, everything is so well organised and so well drilled, there is no space. So the purists who want this expansive rugby, they're just not going to get it because people are on their feet all the time. People like Super 15 because, you know, it's high scoring because often tackling's mildly optional at times. You know, the guys are probably better athletes because they're lighter. You know, they play high-risk rugby because they don't have any relegation. There's no problems with it. And I think it transforms stuff. When you're on the international stage and everybody's hitting, getting back to their feet, speed, there is no space. I don't know where they think they're going to create this. That's why a move off a try is so... off a scrum was so good because those plays where a bit of interest can see some... bit of magic fools people, and you can see that. But most of it is through blunt force trauma, and that's the weirdest thing. We're trying to make the game safer, but the only way to get anywhere is to go forward with speed and go through people. And I don't know any other way. So I think reducing the numbers on the players on the field would be a great idea. I thought about it the other day. Actually, I did think, you know, a rugby league hybrid thing would probably be the best thing for the game. Because
I've been desperate to do this show for ages.
I was watching rugby league the other day and I love the NRL and I see the players. I just watch how they play. I think it's so much better to watch. Albeit, all you have to do is pass the ball behind one bloke, and the guy always scores on the end. I'm not really sure how they haven't read that yet. I know it's easier to defend than you would say because of its continuous momentum. But I think rugby would really benefit from less players on the field.
My boy, just as an aside, was watching... I can't remember what we watched the Wales England game, and then he went on to YouTube and he was watching big tackles and all that kind of thing. And then he started watching this thing about the All Blacks in like the Cullen team, essentially.
Yes.
And there was one Blacks movie, it was in the Bledisloe, and it was Marshall to Mertens into Eremea, and they set up a wall in midfield.
Yeah, they turned round.
Yes. And then Umunga comes back.
Yeah, one guy runs the switch. And then
Lomu goes round, and then Howlett comes back, and then Cullen goes. It's like a triple switch via a wall in midfield.
The problem is you wouldn't have time, I don't think, to do that now.
It's one of the most beautifully constructed tries that you've ever seen. Cullen goes all the way through to the line.
Have you seen that now tap penalties are making a comeback?
Yes.
So most countries now have got a naughty tap penalty move where they'll turn and move it.
Leinster scored an awesome one the other day, which is where they tap went set up to basically crash, and the guy just flips it out the back, and a prop comes on the angle and scores on the play.
And I saw a whole highlight of those the other day, and I thought, wow, you know, the thing is, when you have, if you are of the belief, say, for example, defensively, you're going to deal with blunt force trauma, your mindset is so of such that you're probably quite focused, you're quite ball focused. So when someone does some creative play, it can catch you. It won't catch you all the time because you'll suddenly get caught with your pants down once, then you'll become more alert. But there are those moments, because you see them in every game, where some deception is the answer. I mean, I remember you told that guy came into Penny Hill Park with that letter for Eddie Jones.
Oh, yes.
Basically said the magician was basically going to explain the answer to all rugby's problems. And Dylan and I were quite keen to open it, and then he wouldn't. And then we decided not to because we didn't want to open Eddie's post. And then Eddie just gave it to us, and it basically said, you know, secrecy and deception was the whole thing, but didn't allude to how that deception was. Were you going to have a Harry Potter invisibility cloak, or you were going to like put a spell on people? But there wasn't a reason how he was going to do it, but that's what he believed to be the case. But ironically, that is true. You need to create some deception and some moves to make, you know, the tries happen.
Bring back the wall.
I think a wall would be great. I think number eight moves.
Oh, we had a wall at my school team, prep school.
Really?
Yeah, you set up the wall. Jamie Ross ran right to left. Al McBride ran left to right. Two biggest blokes on the pitch. And one of them, you just give it to one of them and they'd score.
Yeah. We had that. We had a guy, we had a school, Nick Tez is a big listener. We did a Daily Mail Cup final under 15. Nick Tez would come, the wall would have three people running angles. Nick Tez would go through the middle of the wall and he went through and scored. Some
just
kid was
campaign.
Absolutely maimed. You know, there's always that little skinny kid with like ankle socks on.
That was me.
Yeah, was you? Yeah.
I was just running on with the oranges and then off with the empty bowl. I was a good little player at 13, actually.
Were you?
No, not really. But that was probably my final score.
I do think back row moves are an interesting one. Do you remember Parise? How many amazing tries Parise scored? Like pass the ball to six back inside to the nine. They need to make a comeback. Yeah. You know, I don't know why back row moves aren't a thing anymore.
Deception. Bring back the wall, bring back deception. Any more to say about the weekend's rugby?
We sort of
danced around it via player strikes and all sorts of bits and bobs, but I just loved it. I do love the Six Nations this time of year. There are stories everywhere.
Yeah, I think it's the premier tournament in the world. I think the rivalry, the camaraderie that the fans have and the enjoyment. Look, I think rugby's in that particular arena is in a really good place, you know, removing the underlying incompetencies of most of the men involved in it who don't communicate with the players. But actually, you know, pushing France being pushed by Scotland, whereas you went into this tournament, you said France were up there, you know, couldn't be beaten by anyone. Ireland capitalising what they're doing. Wales and England, both of their own
slugging
narratives.
It out.
Italy, you know, trying their hardest to get their first win in the tournament. I just think there's lots of narratives being written that are really good and really positive, and I think lots of fans are having a great time.
Domino's Dough Baller of the Week time. Thanks to our favourite pizza makers. It's time for our Domino's Dough Baller of the Week, where we look at the standout performer from the weekend's action. Would you like to throw someone's name into the mix?
Quite like Dupont's tap tackle on Finn Russell. I don't think it was a Dough Baller
of the Week
moment,
but
I thought it was quite interesting.
Finn conjuring.
Yeah, Finn Russell was very good.
Ollie Lawrence. I like your line about Ollie Lawrence at the breakdown. It's such a pest. And it gives you such a useful addition when you've got an
extra
person.
And he scored another try with a naughty one-hand finish. Kids always put the ball down with two hands unless you're diving in the air.
Actually, him
really
and Awot both went slam dunk.
Yeah.
Mack Hansen was lively for Ireland.
Mack Hansen on that try I thought was very, very good. I don't know who, but pop pass round the man.
Have you got us a little...
Anyone else? Team?
Ellis, lively as well. Can we open it up to the floor? Anyone else? Fiku in France was lively.
Should we give it to Fiku or should we give it to someone at home?
Who was the stand-up? Oh, Freddie Stewart.
Yeah, should we give it to Freddie Stewart?
I think he'd love a piece. There's still a lot of student about him as well.
There is a lot of student about him, isn't there? Student tall, digs. Sort of, you know, he's a big unit, but he's still
excited to be there. Yeah. He's not yet gnarled and wizened and run over by the pressure.
But he leaves his crust, though, doesn't he, like that, you know, sitting with his...
Do you think, no, I reckon he saves, puts him in the fridge for a Monday morning.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, with a garlic dip.
Sitting in his pants, all the lads with like red...
Freddie Student.
Dough baller.
Freddie Student, you are our dough ballers. Actually, that was... We haven't really doffed on, because that was a hell of a performance.
It was.
At the back. What were Wales doing, is the other question.
That was, I mean, Jonathan Davis. Jiffy, the non-one that comes on the pod, he does come on the pod a bit, but he's not part of the furniture like Foxy is. He was exasperated, to say the least.
Yeah,
he pointed out very cleverly, why would you continuously keep kicking the ball to the best proponent under the high ball in world rugby at the moment? And Alex King, it was one point where Alex King was sat in the box, and he is a very, very intelligent man, Alex King, a fantastic coach and a lovely bloke.
Was that his game plan?
No. And I would imagine at some point on Monday, he'll be sitting there going, how are we playing on building an attack? Were you kicking it to the best guy under the high ball? Please don't do that. Kick it anywhere else.
Yeah.
Kick it over that way.
Yeah.
Just look
up. They kicked it to Awot once and then he skinned.
Yeah, stop kicking it then. Yeah. I'll tell you what we should have done is what Sean Edwards used to do, was just, you know, aim for the middle of the posts. Don't kick the ball off. So you just tire out the opposition and keep them running.
Yeah.
That's one way of doing it.
Well done, Freddie. Help yourself to a pizza.
Freddie Student.
Once again, £8 for a small, £10 for a medium, £12 for a large on the price slice deal at the moment. And for those of you listening and enjoying, it's a good way to fill the fallow weekend that is coming up. Italy-Wales. Oh, we'll get into this in more detail next week, but Italy-Wales. Oh.
I mean...
That's sort of hovering over the trapdoor stuff.
I mean...
You've got to lump your pizza on Italy for that one.
Yeah, I wonder. I went to Scott Quinnell's radio show on Sunday morning. Yeah.
So nice to see him on.
And he's got such a fantastic voice. You know what? I sound sort of like a slightly nasally posh git who can't really get his words out. He's got such a powerful baritone voice. Oh, it's unbelievable. It welcome to BBC Wales.
Yeah.
Scott Quinnell, our next guest is a British and Irish lion.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck.
It's like travelling back in time. It's like some sepia.
Ridian. What? Yeah. He's brilliant. He's like, oh, he was a great player. James, please tell us about the tour. You're like, fucking hell, I'll tell you anything you want, Scott, you sexy world bastard.
He is. Because we saw him on Friday. Did you have a look at the family photo?
Oh, my God,
So Craig is in good nick at the moment, but I think Scott said weighs in at 26 stone.
165 kgs.
Right.
Well, don't make that up. No,
Scott is not a small man, and Gav, the younger brother, is the biggest of all of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And Derek, who is one of the greatest of Welsh rugby of all time, again, 6'3" and has lived a good life.
And I can imagine they're all so like chipper and friendly until you upset them and they just tear you limb.
When they hug,
limb.
The ground shakes.
Yeah.
And when the Christmas turkey comes out, it's actually small mountain.
Do you reckon that's why they're so just fighting for it? They had a couple more brothers, but they died because they couldn't get to the meal table. Do you know what I mean?
It is like a family of Obelixes.
Obelix, great reference.
They all fell in the cauldron.
That is exactly what they are.
They all fell in the cauldron.
Do you remember that Asterix Obelix?
I'm reading him at the moment with Harry Payne. He's obsessed with Getafix and Megafix.
Getafix and Megafix. I love that. I used to listen to them as
audiobooks. Books. We digress.
Yeah, but that was great. But anyway, so I went on his radio show. And we were talking about kind of the we meander. I was talking about the game, and actually, I don't even know what my fucking point was now.
You were having a loving with Scott Quinnell on his phone and show.
Yeah, but I can't remember what my point was about there.
He advertised your tour, Wales going to Italy. Pizza?
Yeah. I mean, I just thought about
Warren Gatland. You still don't know what the point is.
No. At the end of the day, I just spoke to Scott Grinnell. He's a sexy man.
He's
a lovely man.
Italy-Wales are going to be belting. England-France. So I think this is make or break for England in this tournament.
Yes.
Win it, and everyone's going, cool, we're all right. Lose it, and you're probably not going to win in Dublin. It's a bit of a step back. Go well, and you're probably halfway between the two. And then Scotland-Ireland's going to be an absolute humdinger. Can Scotland do... Yeah, can they derail the Grand Slam hopes? Ireland are the only one on for it. Mystic Mike will be back with his predictions for round four. How did you... You don't even know what your predictions did.
Oh, no, I did. I video messaged them into our bloke, but I don't know.
I went Ireland by 22, so that was a win, but they only won by 14. I went England by 7, and they won by 10. I went France by 8, and they won by 11. So I was 3 out on the latter two.
It's not too bad,
is it? So I'm hopefully climbing off basement.
Okay.
But probably not. Okay, that is probably us done for this week. Another tour through the highlands and lowlands of rugby union, but it is certainly a hell of a Six Nations that we've got on our hands at the moment. Two rounds still to go off the back of the fallow week. coming up. Make sure you don't miss the Good, the Scouts and the Rugby in partnership with Vodafone, which is coming out tomorrow on Thursday, if you're listening to this. The feasibility around the Women's British and Irish Lions Tour has come back in a positive fashion. What does that mean? I know you're asking yourself. The girls are going to get into that with a very special guest, a legend of Irish rugby. Hopefully a positive feasibility study means we can get on with it and stop talking about what a Lions Tour would look like and just get into what it's going to be. I think we've been talking about it for long enough, but that is going to be a good show, so join the girls for that. Many congratulations as well to Knowlesy.
Yes, Ivor Jack Knoll.
Ivor Jack Knoll. So that is a little boy to get.
Ivor Jack Knoll too. Get it? Ivor. I have.
Well done, family Knoll. That is very exciting news, and we'll look forward to catching up with Knowlesy before too long. Otherwise, I think that is us.
Yeah, please share, please subscribe, check out our tour, check out our Black Eye Gin, buy our merch.
Yeah.
And also leave a review and share and subscribe.
A happy review. We love happy friends.
No, just leave a review, really.
Not the negative Nellies. Yes, gin available at blackeyegin.com, merch available at goodbadrugby.com, tour tickets for Hask available at jameshaskell.org.com. That's pretty much it, I think. Well done, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We have been The Good, The Bad and The Rugby, which is produced by Shira Kilgallen and is a Folding Pocket production. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll see you soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Good, yay, The Bad, and The Rugby, oof, with Alex Payne, James Haskell and Mike Tyndall. Thanks for listening.